big win yesterday. They just finished up their four games in an 8-day stretch. So
yeah,
they've been very busy.
Yeah, it's been it's been a time for if you're a San Diego State Aztec player. It seems like, though, it's kind of weird. When they have, like, time off, they have, like, a week off, they struggle, like, evidence against BYU. But they've had four games in 8 days, and they've gotten W's in three of them. So I guess keep playing? I guess keep the schedule up like this? I don't know.
Yeah, that's very interesting how they're able to pull together. They were able to come back and beat Colorado State after having that obvious tragic loss that we covered in the last podcast.
Oh yeah,
they came back and won 78-65, a real butt kicking, if you ask me.
Yeah, someone awakened the Kraken within the San Diego State basketball team, because they came out angry. Was I at this game? Yeah, I believe I was taking pictures of this game, and yeah, it was another it was another blitzkrieg in terms of three-point shooting, as said by the Colorado State coach, who I've forgotten his name of. Oops, my bad.
Yeah, and then two series against Nevada that, if you're just a fan of basketball, these games were close. No team ever really had a big margin. SDSU barely won each game. Very tight margins.
Oh, yeah, this... games like this, you know, 65-60 win in the first one, and then 69-67 in the second one. These are the kind of games. This is why I will always say that I'm a fan of college basketball over the NBA, because these games specialized in tough, gritty defense with clutch shooting at the right amount of time. And this is just what we wanted. Also, a little bit of talking in here, but They kept it cool for the most part, so good on both of these teams for keeping it cool. So, yeah, we've got four games in 8 days, like you just said before. So now we're talking about let's dig into this a little deeper. Now we've gotten our main course entree, and let's start digging in. Let's see what exactly made these wins, these entrees, happen. So first, let's start with Colorado State, 78-65 W against them, a very nice revenge game, which does keep the Aztecs in competition with the Mountain West, because I think Colorado State almost lost to UNLV, which would have been really bad concerning the net standings. But thankfully, CSU got their crap together and actually won. So let's dig into this one. First off, I want to talk about the stats from this game. Free throw shooting was not good for San Diego State against Colorado State in that second game. Only shooting 54.5% from the free throw line. Normally you don't win games when you do that, but thankfully for them, they also shot 55.8% from field goal range, and from three-point land, a huge, huge 51.9% of their threes were made. That is how you win ball games, especially considering the fact that you didn't make any of your free throws.
Yeah, and when it comes to three-pointers, it is Jordan Shackle all the way. Went 8-for-11 in the game, 28 points, even put up 9 rebounds in the game, got so close to that double-double. How do you stop a guy if he's on fire like that?
How do you stop a guy like that? Is that, if you're a defense and you see a guy who's starting to make it rain from three-point land, I think you start to double-team him. But then if you double-team him, oh, no, look what happens. Now you got Nathan Mensah on the paint, wide open for himself. And now he's going to bully the forward, and he got a point. Well, this isn't good. See, what happens when a guy like Jordan Shackle or a Matt Mitchell is going off, it means that a defense now has to pay more attention to them, which opens up another shooter in the lane or someone in the paint. That is basically the number one ingredient to how San Diego State wins their basketball games right there.
Yeah, totally agree. I think one thing that we have to credit just the whole team is offensive flexibility. Mm-hmm. As we will see in the three games we cover, there are times when one player's hot and then the next game he might not be. But SDSU, they're flexible, and if the three-point shooting isn't working, they can go inside. For this game, though, the three-point shooting was absolutely remarkable. So they just kept at it, and they carried them to the win.
I mean, if it's working, then just keep it going. But another thing that I think is a huge part of the reason the Aztecs came through with a victory against Colorado State in the second go-around was Nathan Mensah. Because Jordan Shackle was going so crazy from the three-pointers, then the Rams had to say, okay, well, now we got to focus on him. And this is the time for Nathan Mensah to shine, because in the first game, 4 points, four rebounds. Not a great game, not a great time in the office. Second go-around, however, 11 points, eight rebounds, and three blocks. I mean, yeah, he had four personal fouls, but that's another story for another day. But this is when San Diego State, that was big for them. Like, this, getting Mensah back into shape is another part of this offense. That was key for them coming out of this victory.
Yeah, last year he was out for a good portion of the season due to some illness. It was really heartbreaking for that team, because they would have been the best team in the nation had they had Mensah and Yanni Wetzel being able to be on the court at the same time.
Oh, but for sure.
He's gotten back into rhythm really well. And another key to this game is the passing. I believe the team finished with 18 total assists. Everyone was dishing the ball around, and that's when you get your good shot. If the defense is constantly moving around, chasing the ball, they will leave someone open eventually. They will slip up, and that's what SDSU used the entire time to attack.
Oh, yeah, you're correct right there. 18 total assists during this game, and Trey Pulliam, a team-high 5 assists. That's Trey Pulliam's, like, main role right there. That is why Trey Pulliam is a starter right there, because his basketball IQ is just, he has a very good basketball IQ. I don't know where I was going with that one, but he's the kind of guy who can set up the pick. He'll set up a three-point play. The offense kind of runs through him in a really strange way, but it just, you know, works. It's how he passes. It's how he sets everything up. When Trey Pulliam is getting those assist numbers high, it usually equates to an Aztec victory.
Yeah, and one thing to note in this game is Adam Seiko had his second career start, and he will be the new guard going forward, it looks like, next to Pulliam. Seiko has started every game since AG was out with an injury, and Seiko's here to stay, I guess. He's an elite defender, but on the offensive side, where do you think he stays, or what do you think his role is?
I think Adam Seiko's role will be kind of like a vanilla version of Trey Pulliam, but where we see Trey Pulliam take more passes, we're going to see Adam Seiko take more shots, because Seiko can also pass the ball around and serve as kind of like what I said, a vanilla version of Trey Pulliam. But he's just got a better shot, in my opinion. That's no slight against Trey Pulliam, but I just believe that Adam Seiko has a better three-point shooting range.
Yeah, I agree. Seiko, he shoots threes and can make a lot. And I think one of his benefits is he's an underrated scorer. So defenses won't stay on him as tightly because they know he won't take as many shots. But he's very selective, and a lot of times when he does take the shot, it goes in. It's just how often will he? Of course, in the game we're talking about right now, Colorado State, he was empty, could not make a bucket, but he changed that around in the next few games.
Yeah, and even if you have like a bad shooting game, you can still contribute through like other things such as rebounds or assists. While, to be honest, he didn't have that great of a game in that game against Colorado State. He only had 2 assists, no rebounds, and a few fouls. He was still there to help, like, set everything up. So even if you don't show up on the box score, you still contribute to a team, because Adam Seiko's plus-minus in 20 minutes and 24 seconds of court time was a 12. So he had a positive net in the plus-minus scorings and the plus-minus stats. So, hey, whatever he's doing, it was working during Colorado State.
Mm-hmm. And then moving on, do you have any final thoughts on this game, or should we move on to the first Nevada game?
I think we should, first off, let's also talk about just a little bit, because Jordan Shackle, like you said, he was insane, literally 28 points. Let's just end it on that because of just how crazy it was for him just to go crazy with that. Let's move on, though. Let's move on to Nevada. First game against Nevada, that little boxing match we had there. Oh, boy.
Yeah, 65-60. The highest margin at any point in the game was 7, but it was constantly within a couple possessions for the lead.
And that's the thing about Nevada is they're not a bad team. Like, they're a good team. In the Mountain West, Nevada is a pretty solid team. And this was a matchup of, I believe, pretty even teams. Like, you know, they're both three-point shooters. They're both pretty good offensively. It's just incredible seeing this kind of, like, back and forth, body blow, just keep on hitting each other. Who's going to come out on top? It was a defensive scrum, but thankfully, San Diego State they just turned around on defense, especially after those games against Colorado State. They knew what to expect coming into this game against Nevada. And just, it's kind of a different story, though, concerning the stats here, the three main stats. Shooting from field goal percentage, it's looking like San Diego State in the first game shot 40.8% from field goal land, while for three-pointers, it was 37.5%. However, the free throw line is what made the difference for San Diego State here. 86.4% free throws against Nevada that first game. That was the money right there. That's where you earn your money.
And so in this game, two players were the highlight for SDSU. Matt Mitchell, who put up his second career double-double, and Nathan Mensa, who didn't get his double-double but was absolutely on fire. So Mitchell put up 20 points with 10 rebounds in the game. And then Mensa put up 16 points with 7 rebounds. Mm-hmm. And then he had 2 blocks and a steal. Mitchell had 1 block and 2 steals. They were on fire in, like, yeah, down low in the paint. That was their game. One other thing to mention, Mitchell went 9 for 10 from the charity stripe, and Mensa went 8 for 10 from the charity stripe.
Yes, that's correct. This was Nathan Mensah's big game in terms of shooting from the charity stripe, because over these past three games, including Colorado State, that second game against Colorado State, we saw that Nathan Mensah only made 12 of 20 from the charity stripe, which is only a 60%. If you're taking a test, like, in college, that's a D right there. But the fact that he made 8 from 10 in that second game, it kind of defeats that whole hack-a-Mensah strategy that some teams have had during the past, where just foul the big guy and hope to God that he misses the free throw, because more 9 times out of 10, he's probably going to miss it. So that kind of defeated that theory in the first game. The second game was kind of different for him. But Matt Mitchell, yeah, 20 points for Matt Mitchell, especially in that second game. In that, oh my God, what am I talking about? First game, the 20 points. 20 points, 10 rebounds, like what you said, Evan. He was their go-to guy. He was the guy on fire during that game.
Yeah, and so, as we mentioned earlier, this was opposite strategies. Our three-point percentage wasn't our bread and butter. Shackle only put up 8 points this game after putting up 28 the previous game, and he was the only player to make 2 3-pointers-pointers in this game. Everyone else had a few attempts, but they only were able to make one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So
and sometimes, go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead, please.
And sometimes you won't make, sometimes you're going to have a bad day during the court. But with Jordan Shackle, it's kind of weird to say that, because Shackle was the only guy to make more than 1 3-pointer-pointer, despite them taking so many 3-point shots. But it's kind of that 3-pointer-pointer that put them, it kind of put them like, it just helped them out a lot, you know?
One of his makes gave him the lead with about 2 minutes left, and they never gave up the lead at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So although he wasn't making a high volume, he made it when it was needed.
He made it when it counts. That's what's important. He made the shots when they counted. I think it might also have to do with how Nevada scheduled it, or how Nevada came into this game, because they saw him go crazy against Colorado State. I mean, they saw 28 points. I think they decided to try and focus a lot of the more attention on him, which opened up Matt Mitchell to start shooting again. I mean, yeah. How do you block this?
And one thing about Mitchell is his size and speed, has to be one of the most intimidating things to defend against. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows he can pull up and take a three-pointer. He can drive to the basket, and he will find a way to get a quality shot. Or he will just make you foul him. And then he will go to the line, and he made 9 of his 10 free throws. So you just don't know how to defend him, and he steamrolled Nevada, really, because he could beat them at any point in the game.
I mean, there's a reason that Mitchell declared for the NBA draft but didn't sign for an agent. He knew he wasn't going to be going to the NBA, but he also wanted to come back to San Diego State. So the NBA told him, the scouts saw him, and they said, all right, here's what we want you to work on. This could be a preview of what we see in a potential NBA run for Matt Mitchell.
Absolutely. He has the size to get in there. Fellow Aztec Malachi Flynn got some time in the NBA and finally made some baskets. We'll talk about that later on, though. So SDSU is kind of building a program. They're not known for producing NBAers. Kawhi Leonard obviously being the most notable, but right now, Dutcher seems to just have the right formula to appeal to NBA scouts.
Yeah. And I think it's also, I'm gonna say one more thing before we move on to the second Nevada game, which was, good golly, Miss Molly, that was even more crazy than the other one. They played all three of these games. Let's see, am I correct here in stating this? Yes, I can say this. They played all three of these games without Kayshaw Johnson. No Kayshaw Johnson in either three of these games. And it's kind of weird because he was also another guy getting kind of some, like, interest saying, like, well, maybe he could be in the NBA. He's got the size. He's got the speed. He just needs a shot. But I think it has to do with that shoulder injury he suffered in that first game against Colorado. So we haven't seen Kayshaw Johnson yet. Stay tuned for more injury updates, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that he is the seventh man off the bench, but he hasn't been there. So, yeah, we do need to get an update from Dutcher on that.
I'm sure that we'll be provided an update sooner or later-ish. Don't quote me on that, please.
Yeah, but moving on to the second Nevada game, 69-67,
nice
buzzer beater finish. Crazy.
Oh my God. So before we say anything, that was SDSU's first buzzer beater since 2012 when Jamal Franklin hit a three-pointer.
Wow, what a throwback.
That is a, well, at least according to the San Diego Union Tribune, oh my God, now I need to go find this. Yes. It was the Aztecs' first buzzer-beating game winner since Jamal Franklin's three against Boise State in the 2012 Mountain West Tournament. That is from Mark Ziegler of the San Diego Union Tribune.
That's insane. This game was so fun to watch. Credit to both Nevada and SDSU. Throughout the game, both teams were in it, both teams were competing, and this was the fourth game in 8 days for SDSU. They were tired.
Yes.
Dutcher said that they had to take a day off, no practicing. They just watched film and prepared. And so they knew their opponent really well because they had just played them, obviously, in the first game against Nevada. So they tried to make some minor adjustments, but to me, it looked like the same game plan as a whole.
Very similar. Very similar. This was – I didn't – as I said in previous podcasts – I was able to take pictures for my college newspaper, Daily Aztec. Go check me out. Plugging right there. No shame at all. But I took some pictures. I noticed that a lot of these players, like, I saw there were, especially on the Aztec side of the ball, they were, like, they just looked dogged tired. I mean, I saw Tomiak. He was on the bike. He was kind of, like, riding it out, trying to, like, ride up some cramps. Shackle, he was looking like he just pulled like two all-nighters to study for a test. These guys were exhausted. This was another physical game between the Aztecs and the Wolfpack, and the Aztecs were just wiped at the end of it. Like, they immediately went straight to the locker room after that buzzer beater.
Yeah, well, they earned it, though. They need to celebrate. Trey Pulliam ended up being the player with 4 seconds left to drive down the court, put in a layup, win the game.
Yeah, coast to coast for Trey Pulliam there. And this is also a weird scenario because we saw some people who got mad at Coach Brian Dutcher for not calling a timeout in that first Colorado State game. He did not call a timeout to set a play before this game. He just kind of he trusted his players to run the play and see what would happen there. I know some people may be mad that he didn't call a timeout, or maybe it may not have been the tactically correct decision, but the trust that Brian Dutcher shows in his players was clearly evident in that final run, that final play.
One thing, especially when we're talking about Dutcher's trust, is a couple plays before, in a must foul situation for Nevada, SDSU inbounds the ball to Nathan Mensa out of all people, when you have Terrell Gomez, Matt Mitchell, and Jordan Shackle, who all are amazing at shooting free throws. But Nathan Mensa is the one who gets the ball, knowing he's going to be fouled instantly.
Go ahead.
To me, that's A, shocking. I thought it was a mistake at first. Like, genuinely, the play that they had written up fell through, and Mensa just stepped up and grabbed the ball because he's massive and his ability to get the ball is very easy. But he did make both free throws. And after the game, Dutcher said that was by design.
I think, because I'm sorting through right here. I'd like to say that it was Mitchell who was the one who was passing the ball for that inbounds.
It was Mitchell, yes.
Yes. But that, again, it shows a lot of faith in your players, and that's kind of what these head coaches have. And it's what players like to see when their coaches have that much faith in them. At that point of the game, Nathan Mensa made one free throw. He was 1 for 4 during the game at the charity stripe. So the fact that they were going to Mensa, knowing that the big guy was probably going to be going up to the line, and he sinks both of them, is just the best kind of payoff. That it's just that much sweeter seeing that happen.
Yeah. Well done by Dutcher. And so for this game, once again, it was a Mitchell and Mensa show. Mitchell put up 20 points with 8 rebounds. Mensa put up 15 points with 6 rebounds. The one change that the team had was a lot better ball passing.
Yes.
Ball movement. They had 13 assists this game, and they had 8 of those assists in the first period, when last game they only had 10 assists throughout the entire game. So that was their one change, I think, that really helped them out.
I think one thing that was big too was the penalties, was like the fouls. Nathan Mensa, in the past 2 games against Nevada and Colorado State, he had 4 personal fouls in each of those games when he scored 11 points, 16 points, respectively. In Saturday's game against Nevada, he had 1 personal foul, especially for a guy who, a power forward slash center like Nathan Mensa, to only have 1 personal foul in the entire game. That keeps him in the game, and you don't have to bench him. You don't have to worry about putting him back on the bench because he's in foul trouble. If he's not in foul trouble, he can continue doing what he does normally, which is bully people in the paint.
Absolutely. It is just amazing. His left-handed shot, which I think also throws off some people, he just can post up and – it feels like it's impossible to stop him once he has the ball in the paint. You can put 2 people on him. You can have an equally tall person. But he just, his feel near the basket, he's a smart player. I think that's something that we don't talk about enough. There's a lot of smart players on the Aztecs.
It was just silky smooth. And the funny thing is, he didn't just go up for layups and stuff or go up on the boards. He was taking jumpers. Like, he took a couple jump shots in this game. He made one of them, but the only one he missed was, like, a last minute because there was, like, 1 second left on the shot clock, and they were trying to inbound the ball really quickly. But he made a jumper. He can take it from range. He can go up to the line. He can shoot from there. He can go underneath the basket. He's looking like more of an all-around player now that he's getting some playing time.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And then from this perspective, the guards, they shared the wealth a little bit more this game. The previous game, it was basically Pulliam. he was the only scorer. This game, Seiko puts up 6 points. Pulliam puts up 7. Shackle puts up 7. Gomez puts up 6. A little bit better spreading the wealth. We did have a little bit better three-pointer percentage, which is really nice to see because SDSU can just – they're threats from deep.
Are we talking about the overall team three-point percentage shooting or, like, individually?
More individually, and just the fact that they were making more. They were – yes, they took quite a few, but it matters about what goes in.
Yes, because this was actually kind of interesting. Looking at the overalls, because overall as a team, San Diego State shot 31.8% from three-pointers. That's kind of a disappointing drop from first game. But however, from field goal percentage, they shot 43.4%. A little bit of a better increase, but still, that tiny increase you have there could be the reason you won the game right there.
That's one or two more shots, and they won by one shot.
That and the fact is, they didn't get dejected in that final three-pointer that was made from Nevada. They did not hang their heads down in shame and said, okay, well, now we're just going to take it and go into overtime and hope to see how it is there. No, they did not do that. And you know what they did instead? They said, okay, you're going to make a shot on us. We're going to go coast-to-coast on you and win this damn thing. That's what we're going to do against you.
One other thing I want to point out, Shackle, once again, we mentioned he was tired, but he shoots and makes baskets when it matters. He only made one three-pointer this game. You want to know when that one three-pointer happened?
When was it, Mr. Anderson?
With 36 seconds left in the game, he makes a three-pointer. SDSU goes up by 3.
That's right.
Huge.
Right there.
Huge. That's just
play. Again, it's choosing your shot, knowing when to take it, and just having that clutch factor. That is what Jordan Shackle is all about.
And so if we want to talk about clutch players, let's throw it back to last season probably and talk about Malachi Flynn, don't you think?
Ooh, Malachi Flynn had himself a nice game in the NBA a couple days ago, did he not?
Yeah, really good game. Made his first baskets. He really didn't receive much playing time, but the Raptors, they decided to trust him. And, well, all SDSU fans know that if you give him minutes and an opportunity, he is going to thrive. In his game against the Sacramento Kings, he put up 12 points. I believe also, yeah, he got 5 rebounds, was 5 for 6 shooting. Was he 5? Yeah, 5 for 6 shooting. Really good playing time in 16 minutes, which I believe also marks his high for the season.
Yeah, so far it's tied for the season. That's the highest amount of minutes he's had since the game against Boston on the 4th of January. We had 16 minutes. He didn't really do much during that time. But Toronto is a 2-6 team right now. If now is the time to start the rookie, why not now? I mean, come on. He had himself a very fine game in this past time. Maybe it's time to finally start putting Malachi Flynn into the rotation a little more. Maybe feed him a few more minutes than previously, because apparently what you've been doing before hasn't been working, Toronto. So why not? You're 2-6. You're at the bottom of the Atlantic standings. So just go for it. Why not?
And I was watching some of this game. He looked just like he did at SDSU. He wasn't afraid that, oh, he's an NBA. He's at the top level of his sport now. You would have thought he's in Viejas Arena playing with the show behind him. He was playing with that confidence, that swagger, and just the brain still. He's a smart guy. He knows when to take shots, knows when he doesn't have a shot, and it worked out. He also had 2 assists in this game. I have to remind fans of that. He is an unselfish player, I'd say.
That's true. I agree with that. I mean, Flynn, he doesn't show a lot of emotion on the court. He's less of a emotional guy, more I'm going to dub him kind of like a, more of like an ice man, like a silent killer. Like, that's kind of what he does on the court. That's like his mental attitude right there.
Yeah. And that's exciting to see. It's always exciting to see Aztecs make it big. This SDSU organization, especially once it's gone over to Brian Dutcher. They have been having competitive teams. I know yesterday's game, the game winner by Pulliam, got national attention in a lot of areas, which is just amazing to see after so long the Aztecs have just been the little guy who occasionally pops up when you have a Kawhi Leonard. But I think the nation's starting to respect the team now.
It's honestly about time, because the only time you hear about teams in the West that are like, who aren't like USC or UCLA, is like someone like Gonzaga, for obvious reasons. It's finally, I think now is the time, especially after last season and this season combined, maybe now teams are finally going to start putting a little bit more respect on the name. Maybe we'll finally get top 25 in the AP, but again, asking to be top 25 in the AP for today is kind of like asking for COVID to magically go away. So, who knows, it would be a miracle.
And so, they have a little bit of a break, but they will go and be playing Utah State next week in another doubleheader type of situation, or a series is a better term for it. How do you think the doubleheaders or the series have been working out this year? And obviously, because of COVID, it's easier to limit exposures, but just this aspect of playing the same team one or two days after you just played them.
It's honestly, it's kind of weird because you get to see the same team again. So the preparing and the planning and the filming is a little bit easier in that respective. But at the same time, they're going to know how you played in that first game. So it's going to be tougher to plan for the second game because, okay, how do we adjust to them in this short of a time span?
Yeah. And I think SDSU made good adjustments in both games. Just to stay on top, that's all you need. And looking at their team, there's Kata again, who... This will be a good matchup for Nathan Mensa, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's going to be a nice...
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. My bad.
Oh, I was going to say, Mensa, as we've been talking about, he's finally finding his pace. He's going to be matched up against a big man who is just as talented as him.
Battle the big man. You'll love to see it.
Yeah.
Also, this is kind of a revenge game for last time when Utah State beat us in the Mountain West tournament. So it's going to be interesting to see how these teams play each other. If there's going to be a little more drawn between the players or a little more physicality, it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, that was my last live game that I've seen. And it was a heartbreaker while there. Oh, my goodness. Both teams played their hearts out. It'll be a little bit different not having Malachi Flynn, Wetzel, Fagan. But Matt Mitchell has stepped up. Mensa's finally playing.
If Shackle and Gomez can find their three-point shooting stroke like they did last against Colorado State, I like our chances. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. We cover SDSU, so we're probably a bit biased. But this is a team that can adjust, that can do it all. I'd give the edge to SDSU.
It's going to be an even game, especially concerning how SDSU has this really bad habit of letting teams hang around, especially towards the end of the game. I think they just kind of need to keep their foot on the gas pedal and just kind of not play with their food. Just finish them off. Play solid defense and try to keep them out of the game for as long as you can. But that's kind of what every coach says, so I'm just repeating the same thing that everyone else says.
Yeah, well, I think that covers the future and the past of this last week.
I think it does too. I think it's a pretty good, I think we covered a lot of it.
Yeah, well, I'd like to say thank you to everyone who's watching and who's, or not watching, listened all this time, but we enjoyed this. We hope you enjoy it, and we'll catch you next week, right?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, I'm free on Sundays, so on Saturday, I might be busy on Saturday, but Sunday I should be free.
Okay, cool.